before we get started, I have a special guest for just 1 minute of today's show. It's executive producer Sonia Cho Swanson.
So I'm here because it is officially the last week to become a founding member of our membership program. You know this, David. We've been seeing the members rolling in. It's so amazing.
Everyone can see our founding members because when you do get in under that deadline, your name is immortalized on our wall of internet for as long as the internet stands, which hopefully will be eternally. But even then, it'll be in the ether forever. So
it'll be in our hearts forever, David.
For sure. Like, yeah, definitely written.
Yes.
Their name written across our hearts.
Should we get tattoos of the founding members on our backs? I don't know. I'm seriously debating it.
I don't know that I have enough room on my little frame. There's so many people.
I got to shout out Diana Woodhouse. So Diana just does a ton of volunteering in the community, teaches at CSN, volunteers at the Smith Center. And she writes that becoming a CityCast member felt like a solid next step in supporting our community. She loves the Where Is It photo in the newsletter. She also really shouted out this little interview I wrote up about the International Market of Miniature Artisans event. She said that she actually because of that article. Shout out.
That was such a good article. I wanted to go because of it.
It was so cool. It was such a cool, just all the photos they had of those tiny little creations. And then she says that one of her favorite podcast episodes was the one where we all debated what the ugliest buildings in Vegas were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the one where we said that the Nevada Supreme Court building looked like a strip club.
Yeah.
Well, I saw one from now member Star Hoffman. She wrote in that she loves the banter, which I think is what we're doing right now with these, you know, deep cuts like Terrence Trent D'Arby references that I made just earlier.
Clearly.
The local updates and the great list of things for locals to do, which absolutely shows up in our newsletter every day. She says that this fits a specific hole in Vegas, which was how to find and connect with local community. And then she finished it by saying, I super appreciate you guys.
Aww.
Well, we appreciate you too, Star Hoffman.
I know. Okay, we just have to get the full text of everyone's comments entirely tattooed on our bodies. And that'll just, you know.
I'm getting flashbacks of Memento now.
Oh, God. Right. Okay. Well, honestly, I have to be honest. I'm a little afraid of tattoo needles. So I'm not going to follow through. Maybe I'll get a temporary tattoo.
Yeah, we'll do it in henna. Everyone, sign up by Friday for founding membership. And look, there's a bunch of perks that come with it. You get to listen to it ad free. And while the podcast will always be free to everybody,
right.
This is just a little bit of extra for the people who jump in early to support us. And there'll be some bonus content, some other fun stuff.
That's right. So sign up to become a founding member by this Friday. Head over to lasvegas.citycast.fm.
All right. Now on to today's show. So I read in the newspaper that the U.S. Department of the Interior has signed off on the newest Colorado River cuts. They're the ones designed to not only cut water usage, but protect the ever-dropping levels of our precious Lake Mead. But was making Lake Mead even a good idea in the first place? Today on CityCast Las Vegas, we revisit a discussion I had last spring about the history and vibrancy of Lake Mead with UNLV Professor of Hydrology, David Kramer. We go deep into Lake Mead's role in our community. Well, not so deep anymore, and come to some surprising conclusions. It's Thursday, March 7th. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Dr. Kramer, can you walk us through how Nevada wound up with a giant lake where there was no lake before?
Well, Hoover Dam was the first major dam on the Colorado River, and the river was really allocated several years before to different states. After 11 years of negotiation in 1922, there was something called the Colorado River Compact, where the seven states of the Colorado River apportioned the river out according to the river flow. At the time, Nevada only had a little over 2,000 people, and so they got the lowest allocation of any state as far as the water on the river.
Oh, you mean Las Vegas had 2,000 people. Nevada was roughly around 77,000 people at that time, but that's still pretty small.
They measure it in something called acre feet. And it's a farming term. It's a foot of water depth over an acre. You know, for about maybe a family of four for a year, it can supply that amount of water. The problem right from the get-go was that the historical flow was much less. They allocated it at a time of high flow.
And what I'm reading, Doctor, is that Las Vegas kind of got screwed, that we had some bad math, some bad formulas, not great representation at the time, and now new challenges make it even harder.
Yeah. And since about 2000, a combination of extended severe drought and an overallocation of water rights, they're depleting the Colorado River, and particularly Lake Mead. Lake Mead is at a low level. It's got a bathtub ring around it where the water has come down.
Yeah, and as someone who's lived here my whole life, it's pretty stark going out there, seeing the difference than what I recall from my childhood.
Yeah, I agree. I'm personally a kayaking enthusiast, and we were kayaking over parts of the lake and structures that are now high above us when we kayak. And so, yeah, the lake is really depleted for those people who've gone out there and watched this steady drop of the lake level.
I have one question, though, because I have no idea what the Colorado River looked like prior to the dam being built and Lake Mead being created. What was the natural flow of the Colorado River as it related to our neck of the woods?
Well, it was really quite variable. Without dams, there were times where it would rain and you'd have snow melt in the spring, and the flow would be very, very high. And then at other times, it would be really quite low. And with dams and reservoirs, the releases could be controlled. And the good thing about that is it reduced flooding, and it allowed allocation of water for agriculture. But the disadvantage of that is when you spread water out in a large lake, you can have evaporative losses, and you can have seepage losses into the banks of the lake, which is a particular problem up at Lake Powell, where they have a lot of sandstone that is sort of water greedy, and water can infiltrate down below. So the combination of evaporation and infiltration loss into a lake depletes a good percentage of the river water.
Now, Las Vegas gets 90% of its water from Lake Mead. I understand that that really kind of shifted in the early 1970s when a pipeline was installed, and then the decision was made that all of Nevada's share of the river water go to Las Vegas. Would we have developed in such a dramatic fashion to have such a high population now if it wasn't for that effort in the early 1970s?
Probably not. We have made great strides in water conservation in the last 30 years or so. In fact, in spite of our population growth over the last couple of decades, our water use has actually declined overall. And so per person, our per capita water use has really gone down with conservation efforts. And in another move, we have something called managed aquifer recharge. It's sort of water in the bank. In other words, when water in the winter is not as necessary for, you know, outside water use and things like that, we have a little bit of a surplus. And so we've pumped it underground here in Las Vegas, sort of like water in the bank, if you will. And then in the summer, when water use is high, we pump it back out. We have these reversible pumps. And so that's called managed aquifer recharge. And we've done it so well that now we are also banking water in Arizona and California as well, sort of like not water for a rainy day. That's the opposite analogy. But for a drought, we have some backup.
Yeah, water under the mattress as opposed to in the mattress.
Yeah. Not really, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the benefits of the dam and having Lake Mead there might be obvious. You know, we get that water for Las Vegas. It generates all that power. But I presume there's also negative consequences of a creation of something like Lake Mead. Let's start with the environmental cost. What is that been for the 90 or so years of having Lake Mead?
Well, whenever you put a reservoir in and put a dam in, there are several things that occur. As I mentioned before, you lose water through evaporation. Also, the Colorado River, as you go downstream, gets saltier and saltier. Agriculture, when they irrigate crops, some of the water under the soil is brought back to the river and it collects some salts, and the water quality decreases. Also, with sunlight on water, it can develop algae and other things of that sort to reduce the water quality. There are also invasive species. There's a certain clam-like species called quagga mussels.
Right.
They're spreading throughout the West. And when you take a boat down Lake Mead, you're supposed to clean it off so you don't carry the quagga mussels to other places.
So what happens to the water by the time it reaches its natural end, which would be in Mexico?
Well, in the past, it was so salty that it really killed crops, and the farmers in Mexico didn't like it. During the Nixon administration, it was decided to put a desalination plant on the U.S. border with Mexico. It was very expensive. It had trouble being workable, but it now supplies fresher water to Mexico so the farmers can continue, although it is quite expensive. And a disadvantage of a desalination plant is you get a fraction of fresh water, which is what you want, but you also create a brine by taking the salts out of a certain portion of the water, and you have to do something with that salty brine.
So where does that brine go?
There's different ways to treat it. There's ways to put it in evaporation ponds and just let the water evaporate and it becomes like a salt bed. Sometimes it's put out to sea where it can dilute. So But there are different ways to treat it.
I'm wondering if there's kind of a general assessment of the fraught politics that the Colorado River dams have sort of wrought upon us, as some people are talking about decommissioning some of those dams.
Yeah, there's talk about decommissioning some of the dams. Some of that is environmentally motivated. Lake Powell, for example, as it filled up, covered up some Native American sites and very, very beautiful canyons. And as it's coming down, these canyons are emerging again, and they're actually quite spectacular in some cases. Senator Barry Goldwater, who was a noted conservative in the 60s and 70s, and he was one of the first people to go through the Grand Canyon. He was a photographer before he was a senator. He said the only vote he regretted in Congress, or he regretted the most, was the vote to create Lake Powell behind Glen Canyon Dam, which went in the early 60s. And so the idea particularly of decommissioning Glen Canyon Dam and Lake Powell is a little bit stronger right now than Lake Mead, as there's a little bit more dependency right now on Lake Mead with cities like Las Vegas.
Now, from what I'm hearing, though, is that the politics aren't just of the normal variety, but we also have that sort of loss of cultural and natural resources, such as indigenous historical sites and canyons. I mean, we even lost cities in the beginning, like St. Thomas, etc. So not exactly a perfect system when we start putting dams on a natural river.
You know, when they first allocated and over-allocated the river, the president, Herbert Hoover, predicted the basin's population, which was just about 450,000 people in the Colorado River Basin in 1915. He predicted it would quadruple. Today, the river serves, depending on your estimates, between 30 and 40 million people, more than 20 times
right.
his prediction.
Right.
And so the negotiations for in the future for how this over-allocated river is going to be reallocated is very complicated, with Native Americans now claiming a senior water right of about 30% of the river, which is a fairly new development in the last few years, in addition to the rights of the states and Mexico.
Yeah. So, Professor Kramer, we've talked about a lot of the downsides of Lake Mead coming on as well. Here's the $46 million question, or at least the $46 million visitor question. Was Lake Mead maybe not the best way to go for doing what it did to the Colorado River?
I'm not sure I really agree with that, because it does control the river. It creates a very clean type of power, a hydroelectric power. That's the good thing about reservoirs and lakes. And it then can be used for hydropower and for agricultural use and for our city use here in Las Vegas. I think that in the future, what you'll see is better management. I mentioned managed aquifer recharge, where we put water underground here in Las Vegas, but also agriculture practices might be able to be changed. Estimates vary, but agriculture uses about 70 to 80% of the Colorado River's water, and it irrigates about 15% of the nation's farmland. It produces about 90% of the nation's winter vegetables, and a lot of that goes to cattle feed, alfalfa, and forage crops. The estimates are about half of the flow goes to feed cattle and livestock. And it's because it's a very profitable crop, but alfalfa is very water greedy. And so I think if I were to predict what's going to happen, you're going to see over time a shift in water use. The ones that are likely to particularly be strained by water rationing might be wheat, corn, berries, fresh produce, and alfalfa and hay, I think, are going to be more and more stressed if water rationing ever starts occurring for our agricultural crops.
I guess if I could summarize, we're going to keep Lake Mead. We just have to manage it better with some changes to the way some of the users farm and possibly even have to deal with rationing water, which people seem to be really upset about.
Yeah, it's hard to predict the future. We've had a very good year for water. The snowpack is well above average, but climate change can exacerbate severe droughts. The precipitation can become more and more unpredictable. You can get more wildfires. We're not out of the woods. 1 year of good snowpack is not enough to even appreciably begin to raise the level of the major reservoirs of Lake Powell and Lake Mead.
Yeah. And, you know, just reading news accounts of it, it's one of those things that makes your, you know, heart rate elevate and your blood pressure go up and down wildly with some of the dire conditions, dire predictions. I mean, we're talking about the final straw, the last straw, all these things. What would happen if Lake Mead dried up? Would Las Vegas just have to go away?
There's something called Deadpool when the lake level drops to a certain level. And so right now, the actual water level above sea level is 1,046 feet above sea level. If it drops to 950 feet above sea level, hydropower cannot be generated anymore. And then that's 96 more feet lower. And if it drops 150 feet lower to about 895 feet above sea level, no more water can be passed through the dam to California or other places. So when you say dries up, you're talking probably about Deadpool. At that point, though, Las Vegas can still draw water.
Do we suffer the quality of the water when we get that low?
Yeah, the water quality would probably diminish. As you get less and less water, it can heat up more and more. As it heats up more and more, that makes it more prone to more sunlight, more algae growth. There are some really bad algae that can grow in lakes that can produce toxins, which are not good. And so the Las Vegas Valley Water District and the Southern Nevada Water Authority, they're on the lookout for that sort of water quality change.
But I do want to ask, is Lake Mead Las Vegas's responsibility at this point? Or are we too dependent on the actions of less water-wise cities and states upriver?
That's a tough question. We have our allocation. And so right now, we're not as dependent on other cities. But in the long term, if water's wasted in other places, that could be a problem. You know, despite the water crunch right now, Utah is thinking of big pipelines that would take water from Lake Powell and, you know, pump it great distances to St. George and other really quickly growing communities and extract even more water from the Colorado River system. And so, again, that's part of the negotiation and legal game that's going to come up in the future, where people are going to have to start making reasonable decisions.
Yeah, our reclamation efforts are pretty legend at this point. A lot of people are looking at us as a model for that. Hey, Dr. Kramer, I really appreciate you taking the time to explain a little bit about Lake Mead. I think even people who have lived here a really long time, we don't know all the facts about that big, fun, recreational area that is so important, not just to Las Vegas, but really the country. And I do, again, appreciate you taking the time.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Don't forget, the deadline to become a founding member is tomorrow, Friday. So head on over to lasvegas.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Till then, stay lucky.